Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
I have called on Hillary Clinton to drop out of the race because she put our nation's security at extremely high risk with her careless use of a private email server. Lock her up, lock her up. Damn right. You're exactly right. There's nothing wrong with that. You know why we're saying that? We're saying that because if I, a guy who knows this business, if I did a tenth of what she did, I would be in jail today.
Those are the words of General Michael Flynn in a speech at the Republican convention this past summer. Named by President Donald Trump to be his national security advisor, and he is out only 24 days later, forced to resign because of what have been called issues of trust related to telephone conversations with the Russian ambassador after the election and before Trump was sworn in as president. I'm Glenn Mobrick. Flynn's resignation is just one of the topics we'll be talking about with our guest today, U.S. Congressman Ron Kind, a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. We'll also get Mr. Kind's reaction to the proposal to build a border wall with Mexico, the protests over the president's executive order banning travel from 7 predominantly Muslim countries, the effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act, and discussions underway about the future of Social Security and Medicare. Joining the conversation and providing analysis today, Rob Menser, storytelling editor for USA Today, Network Wisconsin, and the Wausau Daily Herald. This is, of course, also your chance to direct our conversation and to get a response from the congressman about the things that concern you. If you've got a question or a comment, please give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. I'll read it live on the air. Congressman Kind, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, Glenn, Rob, pleasure to be with you. And bring on the 60-degree temperatures. We're looking forward to that in Wisconsin. Weird for the middle of February, though, this time of year.
Well,
but I don't think too many people are going to complain.
it is weird. Some would say it's a portent of climate change, but we'll take it after
right.
the long winter.
That's right.
Congressman, we just heard the words of Michael Flynn leading the crowd in a chant mm-hmm. of lock her up about Hillary Clinton's email server. And here he is forced to resign over questions of trust, as it's been described, over a call to the Russian ambassador. What do you make of all of that?
Well, first of all, it's very disconcerting, very alarming that on the day when the President of the United States, Barack Obama, was announcing new sanctions against Russia for their interference in the U.S. elections last year, we had the incoming National Security Advisor calling the Russian ambassador and apparently telling him to don't worry about it, that the incoming administration was going to take another look at these sanctions and that they shouldn't be too concerned about it. First of all, that could be a violation of the Logan Act against the law, and how ironic, with the chance of lock her up, that it might be President Trump's National Security Advisor that could end up going to prison. But furthermore, this is just deeply troubling that there's this weird bromance going on with Vladimir Putin and Russia, who are anathema to what we stand for as a nation, not only invading the sovereignty of other nations, but attacking democratic institutions within Russia, from the free press to a viable political opposition to free speech rights. And this is the person that Donald Trump has somehow
tried to develop
a better relationship
There's
a lot here going on, and we do need an independent commission, I feel, in order to get to the bottom of all this.
Well, that's my next question. Senator Tammy Baldwin said yesterday that a special federal prosecutor is needed to investigate what she called possible illegal communications between Russian officials and Michael Flynn. Do you agree with that?
I do, but we need to go even further than that, guys. I mean, we still have the unresolved issue. For the first time in our nation's history, we've had another sovereign nation directly influencing the outcome of one of our elections. And I, for one, am not satisfied with just the expulsion of a few of their diplomats and saying, that's enough. We have to have a proportional response to this and make it clear, whether it's Russia or any other country in the future, that wants to try to influence the outcome of our elections, that there will be serious consequences to doing it. And it's not just us, our democracy, that's on the line. Russia now is already meddling with the free elections in Western Europe that are coming up this year. And if they don't receive any pushback from the democratic countries around the world, they're going to feel that the green light is on, that they can continue to do this in the future. So while it may have seemed quaint a few weeks ago that there was this focus of attention on Russian interference, there hasn't been a whole lot of follow-up thus far with the current administration. And to me, that's deeply troubling because it goes to the heart of our democracy, the ability for us to run free and unfettered elections without interference by another sovereign government.
Well, you've got Republican senators weighing in, Roy Blunt of Missouri, who sits on the Senate Intelligence Committee, and John Cornyn of Texas, calling for an investigation into those connections. But your colleague on the House Oversight Committee, the chairman, Jason Chaffetz, says he's not going to look into it. And what he wants to do is look into the leaks that are coming out of the intelligence agencies. What do you make of that?
I hope that the Republican majority does not become complicit in just trying to cover things up and brush things under the rug when there are very serious allegations that require congressional oversight and review. I would hope that we can move beyond a little bit of the hyper-partisan atmosphere in which we find and make sure that the best interest of our country is kept in mind rather than short-term partisan or political gain. And for Jason Chaffetz, who was a one-man investigative committee for 8 years against Barack Obama, and with endless investigations that ended up nowhere because of the flimsy allegations that existed. For him now to claim that he's more worried about leaks than getting to the substance of the issue is deeply troubling.
Congressman, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the substance of the issue. So, you know, there's a lot we don't know about what these communications were. It's been reported communications between Trump campaign staff or people in Trump world and some right. Russian intelligence agents. And it makes sense that there would be some form of investigation to find out what those consisted of. But just leaving aside all of that on the substance of, you know, what about the U.S.'s relationship with Russia? Donald Trump has said openly that if Putin regards Trump as an ally, that could be a feature, not a bug. And maybe there's a question about what the U.S.'s posture should be towards Russia. What do you see in the sort of foreign policy substance?
Well, first of all, a couple of things. Congress, a member of Congress like myself, has been briefed in regards to the Russian interference in last year's election, and it's a slam dunk case. That's why all 18 intelligence agencies confirmed what they knew and informed and briefed President Trump and his administration. For us now not to be following up on that is very dangerous for future elections in our country and abroad. We have not been briefed at all as far as the news stories that all of us have been reading, that there has been an ongoing FBI investigation about top Trump campaign officials having direct contact with Russian officials during the course of the campaign. I know no more than what the average person might be reading in press reports and news reports today, but apparently it's been confirmed that there is an ongoing investigation in that regard. Every administration, I don't care whether it's a Democrat or Republican, would love to have a better working relationship with a country like Russia. They've got strong military power. They have a presence in that part of the world that's tough to get at. We do share a common concern about the rise of extreme terrorism throughout the Middle East, but it's got to be based on pragmatism and realism and not just pipe dream that somehow they're going to embrace the values that make us who we are. And that's where I get worried about the current Trump administration. They seem to be willing to overlook the suppression of democratic institutions in Russia, the overt invasion of another sovereign nation, the carpet bombing of schools and hospitals in Syria against the Geneva Convention, in order to foster some type of relationship that may not be there ultimately. And so I wish they were a little more pragmatic and less starry-eyed when it comes to the relationship with Putin. But that's why, again, we should be looking into these allegations and what ties actually do exist between Trump officials and including Donald Trump himself. That's why earlier this week
Go on.
A member of the Ways and Means Committee, Democrats voted to require the release of Donald Trump's tax returns, which all our Republican colleagues voted down. I think there's information within those tax returns that could show business dealings in Russia, whether the Trump organization is beholden to large loans from Putin-controlled banks right now. And the fact that he's not releasing those tax returns is also deeply troubling because there could be something there.
Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut says legislation establishing a special Senate committee could theoretically give it the power to get the returns. Is that a course that you'd like to see taken?
Well, I would like to see President Trump do what the eight previous presidents have done, and every candidate running for president has done, and it's released their tax returns. For somehow, he doesn't think the rules apply to him. And he doesn't legally have a requirement to do it, but that has been established precedent now over eight presidents. And for him now just to disregard that, I think is troubling too, because the best disinfectant in any democracy is letting the sunshine in, proper transparency and oversight. And he now is feeling that the rules don't apply with him in that instance. And unfortunately, many members of his own party agree. That's why you have a Jason Chaffetz who's more worried about the leaks rather than the substance of the story that's coming out. And that's deeply troubling.
Let's move on to the president's executive order banning travel from seven predominantly Muslim countries. That ban was struck down by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on a 3-0 vote. Here's the reaction of Stephen Miller, who's a senior advisor to President Trump.
But I want to say something very clearly, and this is going to be very disappointing to the people protesting the president and the people in Congress, like Senator Schumer, who've attacked the president for his lawful and necessary action. The president's powers here are beyond question. The president has the authority under the INA section 8 U.S.C. 1182F to suspend the entry of aliens into this country, and he has Article 2 foreign powers to also engage in conducting border control and immigration control into this country. Those powers are substantial. They represent the very apex of presidential authority, and so we are contemplating new and additional actions to ensure that our immigration system does not become a vehicle for admitting people into our country who are hostile to this nation and its values.
Ron Kind, the courts have overstepped their bounds, and the president's authority will not be questioned.
Apparently, Mr. Miller tended to boycott Political Science 101, where it says that no person, I don't care who you are, is above the law of the Constitution and the United States of America. And that includes, in this instance, too, the courts have a right to judicially review any decision that Congress or the president is making, make sure that it is in compliance with due process, equal protection clauses of the U.S. Constitution. So the claim that the third branch of government is not co-equal, that they have no jurisdiction here, is scary, to tell you the truth. And I think also dangerous, because this is one more step to an authoritarian or dictatorial type of government being established. We all have to be accountable, and that's the genius of the founders, is they established three co-equal branches of government, each in charge of keeping an eye on the others to make sure that no one is overstepping their bounds, that everyone is playing by the rules. And that's exactly the function that the judiciary branch needs and must perform. And for them now to attack the judiciary, as President Trump himself has, naming out justices, again, goes to the heart of our democracy. But beyond that, and this will get resolved in the courts eventually, but it's the policy that's equally troublesome. We need the help of the Muslim nations, especially the Sunni nations throughout the Middle East, when it comes to counterterrorism operations, to partner with us and to feel that they have a legitimate partner. When they start hearing all this anti-Muslim rhetoric coming out of the United States, it makes it very difficult for the leaders of those countries to be seen standing with the United States of America, because the people on the street are going to push back against that. So this is very troublesome from a national security point of view, where it could actually weaken our security goals in this region where you have ISIS and Al-Qaeda, where we do rely on the cooperation of Muslims in order to thwart and to intercept potential terrorist action, whether it's happening there or possibly here in the United States. So the whole premise behind this policy I think is dangerous to our nation.
Let me follow up on something you just said. You called Mr. Miller's comments one step toward an authoritarian or dictatorial form of government in the United States. Are you really worried that Donald Trump might establish an authoritarian or a dictatorial form of government in this country?
I think the institutions of democracy are going to be challenged in this administration. I think when you take a look at the history of how authoritarianism rises, it usually starts with intense political polarization and people going to their respective camps, and then a lot of fear-mongering, and then attacking the very institutions that are supposed to apply a check upon you, whether it's the Congress, whether it's the courts, whether it's intelligence agencies. And that has been a troubling pattern that we've been hearing from Donald Trump for a very long time. And someone who seems to think that the rules don't apply, that he can be above it, is, I think, very disconcerting. So these institutions of democracy, the checks and balances that do exist within our Constitution, I fear will be severely challenged in the coming days.
Congressman, just to return to the executive order, so, you know, this is on hold as it makes its way through the court system, but one part of the order was the ban on immigration from these seven countries. Another part, though, was an indefinite ban on Syrian refugees. I spoke with a woman in Wausau whose family members are Syrian refugees and have her in-laws have been waiting through the to undergo that process. And it's a real humanitarian crisis. At the same time, you know, public opinion polls show that American people are very uncomfortable with sort of raising the numbers of Syrian refugees who might settle here, and that's been a point of controversy. What's the right approach to the refugee question in, you know, what do you see in your district? What's right for Wisconsin? What's right for America?
Well, what's right is continuing with extreme vetting. And today, from these countries, it usually takes, for the political refugees, over 2 years for them to get any type of clearance to come into the United States. And I've supported a measure that would require the various agencies in charge of the vetting to make sure they're coordinating the operation, they're communicating with each other, that they're connecting any dots so that mistakes are not made. I have no problem with that. But just these blanket bans, I think, sends the wrong message about who we are as a nation and how we view that part of the world. Again, we are going to need friends and allies and people who trust us in order to be effective in our counterterrorism operations where ISIS and Al-Qaeda exist, so that they don't ultimately end up on our shores. And the more we make it sound as if we don't want them, that we're against Muslims generally, that we're allowing exceptions for Christians and not Muslims, I think it's harder for those countries to view us as a reliable partner and someone that they can be seen standing with when it comes to countering terrorism. So again, I think this is the wrong approach. If you're trying to secure our country and protect it against potential terrorist threats, to alienate these Muslim nations the way Donald Trump has set out to do.
The proposed wall with Mexico was initially estimated at $10 billion. Estimates now say it will cost $25 billion. Will this pass Congress? What's your best guess?
Well, it shouldn't be surprising that we're in the $21 to $25 billion range right now. And it also should not surprise anyone that Mexico will not be paying for this wall. There's no basis in order to force another country to pay for something that you want to do. And so I think people need to be clear-eyed that if we move forward on this expenditure, it will be American taxpayer dollars that will be going towards it. But the fact is, there's been enhanced security on the southern border for years now through the various measures, high-tech now, a doubling of the Border Patrol. There are fences and walls that already exist. And the truth is also that we're experiencing a net outflow of illegal, undocumented workers from America back to Mexico. So to build a wall now would be blocking and locking them in to this country. The truth is every sovereign nation needs to have secure borders. There's a national security reason for doing it. There's sovereignty reasons for doing it. But the way to guard against undocumented people from coming in here is making sure there isn't such a economic disparity between the two countries. And that's what's made our relationship with Mexico so unique throughout the world. No two nations have shared a border with such extreme economic opportunities that are being offered. Things have been improving in Mexico lately. That's one reason why we've had a tremendous drop in people trying to cross our southern border. But if we do things now that's going to hurt the strength of the Mexican economy, then we better brace for more people coming into the United States looking for better economic opportunities.
Mexico is set to retaliate against American corn farmers and pass a bill directing the country to buy corn from Brazil and Argentina instead of the United States in retaliation, not just for the wall, but for the uptick in enforcement against undocumented immigrants in this country. Are you worried about American farmers?
I am very much, because we have had a very good, strong export market into Mexico, whether it's grain farmers, dairy products from Wisconsin. We've had a very good dairy export market going into Mexico now, and there's no guarantee that Mexico will see a healthy relationship going forward with the United States. Mexico has options. You mentioned Brazil. They could pivot to China. They could go somewhere else for these products, and that ultimately would just inflict unnecessary economic harm on our people then, whether it's manufacturing, production agriculture, the service industry. And that also brings into play what many Republicans are talking about with tax reform, applying a 20% tax on any products that come into our country will invite, I fear, retaliation by these countries, including Mexico, and making it more expensive then for us to be able to export into the Mexican market. This does get complicated, but again, we need to be careful in regards to our relationships, especially with our closest neighbors and closest trading partners, that we don't commit any unforced errors that will inflict economic harm on our very own people at home.
And you've come out in opposition to withdrawing from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, saying that that would hurt Wisconsin farmers. That deal seems to be dead. Why do you take the position that you take that that would be beneficial?
Well, I still believe that our withdrawal from the Trans-Pacific Partnership is going to be perhaps one of the greatest strategic mistakes that we make in the 21st century. We are now literally handing the car keys over to China to establish the rules of trade throughout the fastest growing economic region of the world, which is the Pacific Rim area. Whereas under the Trans-Pacific Partnership, we were the ones at the table. It was American values, it was American goals and objectives that were being negotiated into the trade agreement. Enhanced worker protections, environmental standards, human rights standards, a reduction of tariff barriers that have made it hard for us to export into these other countries' markets. And we're giving all that up now by rejecting the TPP out of hand. And now it's going to end up being a race to the bottom. But we're still going to be trading with these countries, but we'll be trading with them with no rules and no standards at all to enforce, which is what we've been doing throughout the years. And if people haven't been happy with our trade relations, one reason is because of the lack of trade agreements, that we've been trying to compete against the Chinas and other countries with no rules to enforce, which has created an unlevel playing field for our workers and our businesses and our farmers in which to compete. I think the TPP was an effort, albeit imperfect, to try to elevate standards up to where we are, to level the playing field for our workers and businesses. And by turning our back and walking away from it, gives China now carte blanche in that area. They will be able to establish their own rules. And I will guarantee you that China will care less about worker protections, environmental standards, human rights issues the way we do and the way we negotiated that into the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But it also tells these other countries who have been allies to us that they can't rely on us, that their only option now is to pivot to China. And unfortunately, most of our stronger security alliances that we have throughout the globe are based on strong economic ties with these countries, too. That's true for NATO. That would be true in the Pacific. And by turning our back on TPP, we're forcing these other nations who desire a close working relationship with the United States to instead look to China now for the leadership.
You're
and that, again, is going to be unfortunate, throughout the rest of the 21st century, I fear.
You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with our guest, Congressman Ron Kind, Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. I'm Glenn Moberg with Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald. If you've got a question or comment, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back after this to get to Ned from Lake Dubé's call. He's been waiting patiently, and also talk about the repeal of the Affordable Care Act.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollop, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollop, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
You are listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with our guest, Congressman Ron Kind, a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. I'm Glenn Moberg with Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald. And let's go to the phones right now. We have Ned from Lake Dubé, who's been waiting patiently. Ned, you're on with Congressman Ron Kind.
Yes, thank you. One of the issues that I'm concerned about is climate change. And the House of Representatives has a group called the Climate Solutions Caucus, which is a bipartisan group looking for solutions to climate change challenges. I want to thank Representative Kind for his interest in that caucus, which now has 24 members, evenly split, 12 Republicans and 12 Democrats. I'd like to ask Representative Kind, would you please update us on your progress to find a Republican to join with you on that caucus, since it's a requirement that each person that's a Democrat find one that's a Republican and vice versa to join it?
Congressman Kind.
Thanks, Ned. I appreciate hearing from you. It is a working caucus. I think it's a very important caucus. The more opportunities we have to get together and sit down and listen and talk to each other, the easier it's going to be then to find common ground, especially on an issue so important and overwhelming as global climate change and what steps we can rationally take together to address it. It's still a work in progress, however. There's less interest on the Republican side than on the Democratic side, so maintaining that one-to-one ratio is a challenge moving forward. But, Ned, you may have noticed that there was an op-ed penned just recently by some of the wise men of the Republican Party, James Baker and others, talking about further steps that can be taken to be serious and address climate change. And whether that resonates with more of my Republican colleagues remains to be seen. Obviously, the Trump administration is going to take a different approach from the previous administration, whether it's the Paris climate treaty or whatnot. But if there's one silver lining in all this, I think there's just tremendous amount of momentum within the private sector itself to pivot to more alternative and sustainable energy sources, renewable energy sources, enhanced energy efficiency. I've met with a lot of business leaders who said that even with the new administration, they're not going to change course in moving in this direction. Many of our utilities and co-ops have been diversifying their energy sources, going to more wind and solar and geothermal. And there's just a tremendous amount of momentum, I think, in the private sector to keep moving us towards a more clean energy policy and reality. And we need to do what we can to encourage that.
You have any luck at all, as Ned asked you, getting a Republican to join your group?
We're still looking. You know, unfortunately, the more pragmatic Republican members have become fewer and fewer these days, too, in Congress, which is unfortunate because ultimately, for big things to get accomplished, it's going to require some bipartisan cooperation. So I'm going to continue shaking the tree and see what we can produce.
I'd like to ask a question about pragmatic politics, or anyway, politics. A bit of breaking news this morning. Your neighboring congressional district, Representative Sean Duffy, says he will not run for the U.S. Senate seat in 2018. He had been seen as a potential Republican frontrunner to challenge Tammy Baldwin. And so everyone's sort of in the mood to think about the next election already. What do you see as Democrats' challenges over the next 2 years? What is the sort of the key message Democrats should begin with? And what do you see, you know, what is the state of your tea leaf reading on 2018?
Oops, we got a dial tone.
Yeah.
Is that someone else?
That was Ned. That wasn't you.
Great. Yeah. Well, first of all, I would question the supposition that everyone's kind of in the mood of looking to the next election cycle, because I know I'm not after the
brutal read my
campaign
email.
Season we just came out of. But nonetheless, obviously, the energy has shifted overnight from the election day to the next. And you see that in the marches, the demonstrations, the organizing that's already taking place. Citizens showing up at town hall listening sessions, for instance. But I think as a Democratic Party, we're going to need to show up and listen more, especially in rural areas, especially in those areas that feel as if they've been left behind from this economic recovery. You know, both coasts have been doing fairly well when it comes to economic recovery, job growth, but that has not been uniform throughout our country. And I think that was certainly reflected in last November's election results, where Donald Trump did very, very well in rural Wisconsin, rural America. And there's a reason, because people are feeling like their thoughts are not being considered, that the challenges that they're facing are not being addressed. And we have to have a better economic plan by working with them to make sure that no American is being left behind in this. And that's got to be, I think, the overriding goal of the Democratic Party, is that we are inclusive. We don't want to see any section, any community, any neighbor being left behind economically, and continuing to offer an agenda that will spread those economic opportunities to all Wisconsinites and to all Americans.
Yeah, Donald Trump did very well in the 3rd Congressional District, particularly in your stomping grounds in western Wisconsin. Yet you, as a Democrat, didn't even have an opponent on the ballot in the last election. How do you square that? You couldn't find a Republican. They couldn't find one to run against you. Yet the Republicans did very well in the presidential contest in your district.
Well, yeah, it is a good question. But I also think this is also very personal. I mean, you have to show up. And you know, people have had a chance to get to know who Ron Kind is. They watched, many of them watched me grow up as a kid in western Wisconsin, play football and basketball. They know my family. They've seen me and Tawny raise our children in the area. I'm constantly having listening sessions and getting out in the community. They know I'd love to do a lot of the things they do. I'm a great outdoor enthusiast. I love to hunt. I love to fish. I love to go canoeing and backpacking and camping and things that most Wisconsinites enjoy doing. I bleed green and gold like they do. Unfortunately, Secretary Clinton did not step foot in Wisconsin after the primary. Donald Trump made repeated visits. It's the first time in my memory that I can think of where we didn't have a major presidential candidate do a swing through western Wisconsin, talking about their goals and their economic agenda. And when people see that, they think you don't care, that you're not even willing to show up. And I think that was certainly part of it. But there were multiple factors that led to the outcome. The fact that I think all the messages leading up to Election Day was from the polling and the Clinton campaign, that this is a done deal, that it's just a question of what margin she's going to win by, that bred complacency. And we certainly saw a drop-off of Democratic enthusiasm and participation in the last election. But now it's all on them, guys. I mean, they have the White House, they have the Congress, they have the governorship, they have the legislature. It's time for them to really start producing on measures that are going to improve people's lives. And just sitting back and criticizing and obstructing is no longer a viable political strategy for them moving forward. And that gets me into the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. This zeal to repeal with no legitimate plan B or alternative is incredibly irresponsible, because you're playing with people's lives and the health care coverage that they now have. And they've been wrestling now for over 7 years of what plan B would look like, and they're still pulling up short. There's incredible turmoil and debate taking place within the Republican Party about what an alternative or a replacement would look like, and they're pulling up short.
You know, there's been
if they want to be honest with the American people, they would admit that there are a lot of good, important features of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare that should not be touched, that should not be changed. But there are things that we have to work on together to make sure that health care is more affordable for all Americans. And there are steps that I think we can do working together in order to continue to move in that direction.
Republicans are getting some significant pushback from their own constituents over this issue, even in solidly Republican states like Utah. Let's listen to just a few seconds of Utah Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz at a town hall meeting this week on the Affordable Care Act.
Some of you will agree with the positions I've taken. Some of you will disagree with the positions I've taken.
No one agrees with your position.
I appreciate what you said. Let's go over here. One of these no signs. This gentleman, radio. Right there, hit that hat. Keep going.
You know, Ron Kind, back in 2010, after passage of the Affordable Care Act, Democrats often faced hostile town meetings. Are we seeing the rise of a progressive Tea Party sort of movement around this and other issues? The opposition
this,
you hear, does that have staying
so
power?
Important. It affects all of our lives and our families, that I wish we can get to a place in our political system where it's not just used as a political punching bag in an effort to scare people. And we certainly saw that leading up to passage of the Affordable Care Act with the town halls that I had and others did throughout the country. But the joke around here that I'm hearing from some of my Republican colleagues is that it's their intent to repeal Obamacare and then replace it with the Affordable Care Act. Well, I think they're first now starting to realize, at reading the Affordable Care Act and the consequences of repealing it, what it's going to mean to average people's lives. And the truth is, one reason they're having a hard time finding the alternative or replacement is because we took most of their best ideas and put it into the Affordable Care Act. You know, the idea of having universal coverage, the idea of having competitive exchanges of insurance companies competing for people's business, a lot of that was originated in Republican think tanks. And now they're starting to go back and finding out what they're going to replace it with, and they're coming up short with solutions. But what we need is an honest conversation with each other about the type of health care that we need, what we can afford, what more we can do to change the delivery system, change the payment system so we're rewarding value and quality and outcomes so we're getting better results at a better price. We can't duck from the rising drug price issue. That's one thing the Affordable Care Act did not address, in my mind, very adequately, is rising prescription drug prices. And yet, what I'm hearing is some solutions that don't even touch that from the other side. And this is complicated. It's hard. It's why putting together the ACA Act was so difficult to begin with. And it's awfully easy to scare people about their health care. And we've got to figure out a way of how we can move beyond that so we can have some honest conversations about what the policy should be.
We're looking, according to some estimates, of 20 million people losing their health insurance if it's repealed without being replaced. Your statement on the proposal said 144,000 citizens in Wisconsin would lose their health care, and it would add $9.5 trillion to the national debt. Do you stand by those figures?
I do, and I would hope that if they're going to go forward with some type of replacement, that they just don't pull the rug out from BadgerCare recipients in Wisconsin, from those who are currently on the exchange and receiving premium tax credits because they can't afford it on their own. And that's the hard part. The hard part is, how do you extend universal coverage to those who can't afford it on their own? And Republicans are going to have to realize they have to spend a little money in order to do that, something that they've been loath to do in the past. I know they've been talking a lot about high-risk pools, creating those again. But unless you heavily subsidize those high-risk pools, because by definition you're going to get the sickest and most neediest people in them, they're going to fail. And if they go forward with some of the Medicaid changes that they're proposing, if their past budgets are any guide, they're talking about a 50% reduction in funding for Medicaid. Well, you just set these governors up for failure then. And I don't care how much flexibility you give them to run the program, if the resources aren't there, they're going to fail. And that's going to be trouble for people back home. So, I'm not sure where this goes. I think they wanted to do it quickly, and now they're realizing it's not that easy. And if they would start reaching out a little bit and trying to find some common ground, there is a lot of interest in trying to address rising health care expenses, because health care is still way too expensive in this country. And there could be some areas of common agreement that we can take to make sure that all Americans are receiving quality but affordable health plans in their lives.
Candidate Donald Trump said he was going to leave Social Security and Medicare alone. Some of your colleagues in the U.S. Congress don't agree with that stance. Are you worried that Social Security and Medicare will be targeted by the new administration?
Well, again, if past budgets are any guide, they took a run at privatizing Social Security and putting that money in the stock market during the Bush administration. Unfortunately, many people around the country rose up and said, bad idea. And thank goodness they did, because it was right before the 2007 financial meltdown. Can you imagine what would have happened to Social Security if that money was in the stock market at that time? It would have been disastrous for the program. So there are things we can do to shore up and to maintain the solvency of Social Security and protect the promise that was made to the current generation and future generations. But I'm not a big supporter of the privatization plans that they've been eager to try to pass. And there are things we can do with Medicare to make it more solvent and healthier. I've been a big advocate for delivery system reform based on models of care that we see in Wisconsin that work very well. They're more integrated, they're more coordinated, they're patient-centered, they're getting better results. And I've also been one of the strongest voices in Washington in changing the way we pay for health care. So it is based on outcomes and quality and no longer on more tests, more procedures, more things that oftentimes don't improve patient care and many times leave people worse off rather than better off. That's been bankrupting us in the past. So there are these areas of common agreement that I feel that we can do that could reform Medicare, but without taking away the benefits that older Americans are receiving, yet get a better price for the outcome that we desire.
You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with our guest, Congressman Ron Kind, a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. I'm Glenn Moberg with Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald. Hang on, Ray, from Stevens Point. We'll get to your question right after this break.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, dedicated to moving the Wisconsin economy forward through the support of various industries across the state. More information is at reinvestuw.org. Support also comes from the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra, presenting Magic, Mystery, and More, February 25th and 26th at Centuries Theater at 1800. Lawrence Levitin leads a tour through music and film. CWSO.org.
You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with our guest, Congressman Ron Kind, a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. I'm Glenn Moberg with Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald. Congressman Kind, Governor Scott Walker may be running for a third term, and Democrats will need a tough candidate. Are you interested in running against him for governor in 2 years?
You guys are bound and determined to get us into 2018, aren't you, for another election cycle. Listen, I've been troubled, as many people have throughout the state, in regards to the direction of where we've gone as a state, the unnecessary division, pitting people against each other, dividing families. We deserve better leadership, but no decision has been made on my behalf. And quite frankly, I've got a lot on my plate right now with the new administration and what's happening in Washington. So I want to stay focused here for a while.
Are you ruling out a run against Governor Walker?
No, I haven't made any decision one way or the other, but we'll certainly let you guys know at the appropriate time.
Rob Mentzer?
So I do have a question. I mean, you'll forgive me for a crass political question, but I mean, there's a little bit of a debate about to what extent Democrats ought to seek common ground with Trump or with Republicans right now on something like an infrastructure bill. You referred to the potential for common ground on some healthcare fixes. What do you think? Should Democrats be working with Republicans right now?
You know, I've said from the very beginning that if Donald Trump is really interested in pursuing an agenda that expands economic opportunities for all Wisconsinites, all Americans, I'm very interested in working with him and any of my colleagues that are interested in focusing on jobs, 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 good-paying jobs. Growing economy solves a lot of problems. But I will continue to stand up and fight for the most vulnerable in our communities. I will be a check on some of his darker impulses. And we just have to wait and see what that agenda is going to look like. Certainly the first 3 weeks have been chaotic. not totally unexpected, but nonetheless, we're going to need a little more clarity of thought of where he wants to go with his economic agenda on tax reform, on health care reform, on an infrastructure investment in our country again. But I also want to be a guardian of the American tax dollar. I've been a strong proponent of pay-as-you-go budgeting, that we're not racking up huge budget deficits for our children and grandchildren. So I want to see if these initiatives that he might come out with are fully paid for and they're offset, so we're not adding to the national debt in the future. And yet, it's too early to tell. We're still very much operating in a fog when it comes to what the real agenda in the Trump administration is going to look like.
Let's go to Ray from Stevens Point, who's been waiting patiently. Ray, you're on Route 51 with Congressman Ron Kind.
You continue to defend the TPP and every other trade deal that ever came along. What do you have to say to Wisconsin's blue-collar factory workers who've seen their jobs and their factories going away year by year? Even the ones that are still open here in central Wisconsin, our paper mills are facing greater and greater pressure from cheap foreign imports and are losing their high-wage jobs. Right now we have GE Waukesha shutting down their Waukesha plant, 300 factory workers losing their job to foreign plants. What do you have to say to us?
Ron Kind?
Well, Ray, I appreciate that question and that. First of all, GE Waukesha made it clear that the reason they're shutting down that plant and moving it to Canada is because of the inability of the Republican Congress to reauthorize the Export-Import Bank, which made it easier for them to be able to export products to other countries. They now are moving to Canada, who has a system set up that's going to make them successful in doing that. So that's one specific example of something Congress could have very easily have done in order to save good manufacturing jobs in Wisconsin, and they failed to do it. But there's been a lot of focus on the transfer of plants and jobs to China in recent decades, and that certainly has been the case. But guess what, Ray? We don't have a trade agreement with China. It's been a race to the bottom with them. They don't have worker standards. They don't have environmental standards. They don't have human rights standards. They do have high tariff barriers that make it harder for our companies to make and grow and invent things in Wisconsin to ship to China. And because of that, it's forcing these companies to move into the China market to avoid those tariffs. These trade agreements address those concerns. They reduce tariff barriers. They require other countries that are going to be trading with us to have enhanced worker protections, environmental standards, again, elevating that up to where we are so we have a more level playing field in which to compete. There are over 200 nations throughout the world. We have trade agreements with just 20 of them. That means with the other 180, except for Cuba and North Korea and Iran, who we don't trade with today, we have no trade agreement, and therefore no rules and no standards in which to enforce. That has been a race to the bottom. And if you haven't been happy with that system, neither have I. It hasn't worked very well for our workers and farmers back home. So the idea that we should just reject trade agreements, continue the status quo, I think continues to perpetuate the job loss that we've had throughout the years.
Ray, thank you so much for the phone call. We're down to our last minute, Congressman Kind, so let me follow up with something Ray said. What have you done concretely within the last few months, the last year, to help the job prospects of people living in Wisconsin?
Well, it's interesting you asked. I've been heavily involved in shaping farm policy, and the last couple of years have been pretty rough on our farmers. And production agriculture is still the number one industry that we have in Wisconsin, employing more people directly or indirectly. That's one of the reasons I've been a strong proponent of trying to open up these other markets so that we can export more easily and maintain that vital industry right in our own backyard. One out of every 3 acres planted in Wisconsin is export-bound. Our dairy industry is very dependent on export markets, especially Mexico right now, in order to sell their products so they get a better price for it. All that could be in jeopardy if we don't pursue the right policies or the right legislation to make it easier for our workers and businesses to compete in the global marketplace. We're not going to be able to change globalization. I mean, it's a force. The best we can do is make sure that we're shaping it so that it works for Wisconsinites and it works for our businesses and our farmers and all of our workers within the state. That, I think, is the paramount challenge that we face as a nation today, is how are we going to address increased global competition, and how do we set the next generation up for success rather than failure? And if you haven't been happy with the policies in the past, then we do need to call an audible and make sure that our students are receiving the education and the job skills that they need so they can successfully compete, because the jobs of the future are going to put a premium on higher education skills and workforce development skills, and we've got to be ready for that as
Ron
a state,
Kind.
Or we're going to continue to fall behind.
Ron Kind,
I mean,
we're complete.
Wisconsin is ranked dead last, 50 out of 50, when it comes to entrepreneurship and new business development. That is unacceptable,
Ron,
in the 21st century.
Ron Kind, we are completely out of time. Thank you so much for being so generous with yours today.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure. Happy to be with you.
We want to thank U.S. Congressman Ron Kind. You can visit his website at kind.house.gov. Thanks also to Rob Mentzer of USA Today Network, Wisconsin, and the Wausau Daily Herald. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss, and John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Until next week, we're heading out of town.